This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Hour number three of a Sunday edition of the show. Glad you're with us at 1-800-919-3776. Also via Twitter at Hardesty ESPN at ESPN NY 98_7FM. We've talked basketball. We've talked a little Jets, talked a little baseball. Now it's time to talk Big Blue. And for that, we turn to my guy. Whenever I want to know what's going on with the Giants, I tell my guys, dial Jordan Renan because he has all the answers. And he does a real good job, too. Hi, Jordan. How are you?
Larry, what's going on, man?
Everything is good, my friend. What's
beautiful
happening?
Beautiful day.
Gorgeous day.
Nothing. Beautiful Memorial Day weekend right now. I hope everyone's enjoying.
How's your golf game these days?
I have not been playing well, but the last couple rounds have gone well. So, you know, we played Friday. I might have been a little thirsty by the end, but, you know, we made it through, and it was a beautiful day. I'm playing better.
And that's the bottom line.
We're almost in full-blown golf season, right, because the NFL really takes off from, like, mid to late June until late July. So, like, those 6 weeks the league really shuts down, we're approaching on that quickly.
Yes, and you will need that rest because it's going to be a long season, my friend, because I think you're going to the postseason again. So let's talk a little bit about this Giants football team. How, obviously, I haven't seen the Giants listed in this idea of DeAndre Hopkins, but is there a wild possibility, Jordan, that something could be done where you could add to your already growing talented receiving core with DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's anything I would completely rule out, to be honest with you. It's always been like this. It was the same thing with Odell. Like, if the price is right, like, you know, if it's just, okay, this is just a good bargain. This makes sense for us. If the price is low enough, I think it's a move that the Giants would be willing to make. Because if you talk about their glorious receiving core, like, there's some useful quality players. It doesn't have that high-end guy, right? That guy that you know you could just throw the ball to and go to just about every play, and he's going to be open, right? He's going to create separation. He's going to be able to make tough catches consistently under pressure. So I don't think they're not at the top of the list. I think they're definitely not the favorites in my mind. But is it an outside possibility that DeAndre Hopkins ends up a Giant at the end of the day? Slim chance, but not impossible.
Well, and that's a good thing. So at least he's in the conversation with them. But they've done some things already, Jordan, that have improved the receiving core already. We've talked about Waller. We've talked about some of the adjustments they've made. Yeah. We've got some rookie kids coming in. And so some of the things that I'm hearing surrounding OTAs from some of your colleagues on the beat has been, this is really going to be a season that we, it's so funny, it's always about the quarterback, right? But this is really going to be a season we find out about Daniel Jones, because once he's gotten the money, he's gotten rewarded for his play. And now, because you have more weapons offensively, he'll be able to get the ball down the field. Now, is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing? And now we start to talk about the turnover thing, Jordan, where, to be fair, he's cut down on this turnover. So why are we still harping on this?
I just think, you know, I mean, you look at how Daniel Jones played last year. He played really, really well. You know, sixth in QBR. I mean, really well. And then there's the flip side where, you know, a lot of people, and it's easy to come up with this solution. Well, he threw 15 touchdown passes, right? Oh, they didn't ask him to do a lot. And there's some merit to that. So both sides, there's reasons for it as well. So it's like, all right, we need to see him put it all together, play the way he did last year, have the pieces around him where they, you know, they can make some big plays and they can do things that they just, quite frankly, didn't have the personnel to do last year. So, and he puts up those numbers, right? So he's top 10 in QBR and he throws 25 to 30 touchdown passes, right? And he keeps the turnovers at a, you know, at a reasonable level. So, he has the big contract now, so the expectations actually go up, because it's not like, well, if he's a serviceable quarterback, that's good. It's now, no, you're getting paid as a $40-plus million quarterback. You better be good.
But some of this pressure goes to Daboll too, right? Jordan, because he's getting part of the credit for what Daniel Jones was able to do. So what? Tell me about what Dable has to do for an encore this season. Tell me your thoughts on what he needs to do to improve, because he had a heck of a first year. I mean, you know, to take this team, what they were able to do with the talent they had, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and to, you know, get into the playoffs and win a playoff round against a – look, people can say what they say about Minnesota. You still – they were in the playoffs. You beat them. So you don't minimize Minnesota because you beat them. You beat them. So what does he have to do now to for this Giant team to take another step? Although, as we've said, you know, they could be better and have a worse record.
Yeah, well, it actually comes down to what the expectations are for the Giants this year. And I think, like you said, you think they're a playoff team. I think a lot of people think they're going to be a playoff team, especially Giants fans. So they're looking at it saying, well, you know, anything less than the playoffs is a step back for this organization. I personally don't quite see it that way. I think I picked them at like around 8-9, right? And I think they could be a better team with a worse record. Their schedule is going to be harder. They might not get a couple breaks that maybe that worked in their favor last year, right? They won a ton of really close games. There was a lot of, you know, if you dig deep into the statistics, you're like, well, this really wasn't a great team, but the record showed that they were a pretty good team, right? 9-7-1 plus a playoff win, so ultimately 10-7-1. That's a pretty good season. So I think you go 8-9, and in my opinion, that's like sort of meeting expectations. But I know there's going to be some people out there that are instantly going to be like, oh, Brian Dable, you know, they went backwards year two. They went 8-9. And, you know, it really all is about where you're setting the expectations for the season. So you tell me, Larry, what do you say if this team goes 8-9? They do some good things, but they still have holes. They still have warts.
Right.
You know, they're let's say Darren Waller gets banged up. Their receiving core, again, is pedestrian. And, you know, they're offensively, they're a little limited.
I would be disappointed. That's what I would say. Yeah. I would be disappointed at 8-9 because I would expect
Brian Dable's got big shoes. He's got high expectations. He basically has to have another – top year, win 10 or more games. Otherwise, everyone's going to look at it and say, you know, all of a sudden, he's not going to be this genius anymore. I saw a place, I forget who it was, but he was rated as the 8th best coach in the NFL after 1 year. Right? So everyone in year one, all the first-year coaches were like 32, 31, 30, like start at the straight bottom. Well, Brian Dable flew up to number 8 on this list, like basically ahead of Bill Belichick. And you're like, okay. You know, I guess that's how quickly things can change and expectations really guide a lot of people's opinions.
Tells you about how big quarterback play is, right? Because Daniel Jones was better than the kid up in New England. So that's why Dabo looks smarter than Belichick right now. Jordan Renaud's my guest. You also listen to him breaking Big Blue on the ESPN New York app. Does a great job with that.
Larry,
keep you up to date.
Larry, let me say one thing.
Yes.
Real quick. When you talk about Dable and you say the quarterback played better, well, that's the thing now. The quarterback has to continue to go forward because Joe Shane and Brian Dable made the assessment that Daniel Jones was the guy. They thought he was good enough. We're going to go forward with him. So if they need Daniel Jones to be good. Otherwise, that's on them, right?
Yeah.
This was their decision to say, okay, we're investing in this guy long-term. He's our guy.
Yeah, which is interesting because when they came in, they weren't sure he was their guy. And, you know, he proved it to them, and they gave him the money and rightfully so. That's the way it is. He earned it. So you can't say anything bad about it. Jordan, look, you mentioned the schedule. AFC East this year, it's NFC West. It's a tough schedule, but I don't think it's unreasonable. Do you think?
It's not unreasonable. I mean, this is just what the schedule was going to be. It's just a lot harder. Remember last year they played the AFC South. The AFC South was bad. The NFC North, right? By the way, they swept the AFC South, okay? Now you have to replace the AFC South with the AFC East, which you can argue is the best division in football, right? Probably up there with the NFC East. Mm-hmm. Like, there's the biggest gimme in the AFC East is New England. And, you know, even in their bad years with Bill Belichick, they hover around mediocrity. Like, so there's some good teams and some certainly good quarterbacks in the AFC East now. And, instead of the NFC North, which was bad last year, right, because Green Bay was a shell of themselves. Minnesota, we all knew, was a fraudulent team. And then you got Detroit, who was better, but still not great, and Chicago. So you're replacing that now with the NFC West. It was just going to be a harder road regardless. So, and on top of that, by the way, Larry, it's the alternating year thing.
Yeah,
last year, 9 home games. This year, 8 home games, right? So that does make a difference. Think about it. That's another game that's on the road, and that they're probably underdogs, depending on the opponent. And then you factor in 2 road primetime games at San Francisco on a Thursday night and at Buffalo on a Monday night. Those are basically 2 spots where you could take any team in the NFL and just put an L in those spots. Those are really tough spots to go in there in prime time and win. And I'd be surprised if there's many, if any teams that go in that would be able to do that.
So while we're talking a lot about Daboll and the offense, this is going to be an interesting year for Wink Martindale in the defense, isn't it, Jordan? Because with the better quality of teams means you have to ask your defense to do some more things against, the AFC, which has some pretty good quarterback play in it.
Yeah, the Giants' defense was not great last year. They were actually very vulnerable against the run, play action pass. They were atrocious in the middle of the field, really, at linebacker. Now, Bobby Okereke should help them out greatly there. But they still have holes on this defense. So while the expectations are higher, Dexter Lawrence has a big money deal. Leonard Williams is like a top 10 cap hit in the NFL this year. So obviously the expectations for him are high. Adoree Jackson is in a contract year. They need him to stay healthy. They still have some spots, so you look at, inside linebacker at OTAs, Garrett Davis, the veteran who was on the Lions practice squad late last year, was running with the first team. Bobby McCain was running with the first team at safety. Like, they still have some spots. Deontay Banks is likely going to be a starter. You're talking about a rookie cornerback. He might have some, ups and downs for sure as a rookie. Just that's what happens when you're a rookie cornerback in this league. So they have some spots. You hope they can just get sufficient play out of it, and you're looking for that next step. To me, the defense revolves around, can Azeez Ojulari stay healthy and Kayvon Thibodeau take that next step? Because if you have those edge rushers and you can rush the passer, we've seen this in the past, right? This is the Giants' blueprint in the past of success. Rush the passer, rush the passer, rush the passer. It makes everyone else look better.
Yeah, no question about it. Last thing, Jordan, will we see Saquon Barkley at mandatory minis in a couple of weeks?
Well, it's not mandatory for him because he did not sign his franchise tag yet. Mm-hmm. So my answer to that is likely no, unless there's a new deal, which I don't really foresee happening. If there's a new deal, and I think there's a chance that the two sides do come to some kind of agreement that works for both parties, because Saquon, quite frankly, doesn't have a ton of leverage and isn't in a great spot. And the Giants would rather have a happy Saquon Barkley rather than a unhappy Saquon Barkley moping around and perhaps derailing their season, not intentionally, but like, it's hard when you're in there and that you're basically, the team did not want to commit to you long-term, essentially, at least to the degree that you were hoping for. So I do think there's a possibility, but we're talking about that deadline is not until July 17th. So I think right around there is when we'll get serious about, okay, something might actually get done mid-July. I don't think it's going to happen by mid-June. Now, maybe it does, but at this point, I would expect to not see Saquon Barkley until sometime this summer. And this is just my opinion. I think if he does not get a long-term deal, we probably won't see Saquon Barkley until late August, right? Somewhere around there, maybe even early September, a few weeks before the season, right? Because why are you going to go out there and risk an injury? The Giants basically said, by not signing him long-term, if you get injured, we'll just let you go next offseason, right?
Why
risk getting injured in the summer? You at least minimize that and come in a few weeks before the season and you could ramp up. And is anyone really worried if he comes in 2 weeks before the season?
No, not
before
really.
The season?
No.
Mm-mm. He's a running back. He is in the system. He knows how to play.
It's his, unfortunately, his character and goodwill is adding more leverage to the Giants than to him, because they know he's going to be in shape. They know he's prepared. They know he's disciplined. They know he knows the playbook. They know he'll come in when he'll be fine whenever he comes in.
Yeah, well, there's not another profession out there that's willing to pay Saquon Barkley $10 million a year.
Absolutely.
And he plays a position where you can't sit out. Everybody knows it. Look at what happened to Le'Veon Bell. His career ended, right, basically. So you have no – like, it doesn't matter. You're going to play, right? So mm-hmm. We'll just wait you out. You'll be in eventually. You have no other choice, eventually.
Yeah, it's true. Remember, my friend, drive for show, but putt for dough. Always remember that. Always
yeah,
remember that.
Driving crappy, so maybe I could live by that.
Putting is where you make your money, though, my friend. That's what reading the greens. You look like a good reading the greens guy. I think you'll be
definitely.
All right.
I'm on top of it.
I know you are.
You need just a good like caddy. That's why you need a good caddy. I blame everything on the caddy. If I miss, it's the caddy's fault.
Jordan Rondo,
by the way,
who never misses.
I'm not this rich guy who's like running around on these fancy golf courses with caddies on a regularity, by the way. So it's the invisible caddy I'm talking about, the guy who's in my head who's telling me what to do and is wrong very often.
Every once in a while, though, you're entitled to have one caddy because you do such great work with the Giants. You have one caddy every once in a while. It's okay.
All right.
It's all right.
Perfect.
Good talking to you as always, my friend. We'll chat soon.
Larry, enjoy the Memorial Day weekend, man.
You too. Thanks, Jordan. Jordan Rondon, 1-800-919-3776. Phones are open. It's you and I until 3 on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
1-800-919-3776. Taking your phone calls till 3 o'clock here on the Larry Hardesty Show. Let's chat with Terrence in the car. Terrence, you are next on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, Larry. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Terrence. What's up, my friend?
Great. Hey, I want to say, you know, it's interesting. We haven't heard much about Coach Mazzulla, his adjustments or you know, if whether or not. I'm curious if he would still get fired if the Celtics lose in Game 7. Because you can argue that him adding Dirk White into the lineup games ago actually helped win this game, having him take the ball out and then putting the ball back. Him putting that guy in a position to succeed to push them to Game 7, could argue that was his adjustment from games ago. But I'm curious about how they would handle if they lost, if they still want to get rid of him or not.
I'll speculate for you, Terrence. Thanks for the phone call, because obviously I have no idea. Don't cover the Celtics day to day. But from reading a number of the beat writers, you are correct. There was talk about him being fired. After that game three, if they had followed a game four with anything close to a game three, you'd have to be considered that he would have probably lost his job. I think, though, that the opposite is in effect here. I think the fact that they are in a game seven, having been down 0-3, kind of saves him. Now, does it give him a long leash? I don't know. Does it mean that he gets a chance to go into next season and be reevaluated again? What happens in a game seven? Obviously, if they win and they get to the finals, he's back. That's clear. But I think the fact that they fought back to force a game seven after being down 0-3 helps his case to come back next year. Now, they may make some adjustments. They may, you know, tell him he's got to do some different things, or they may see that they have to make some adjustments to their roster. But I do think, Terrence, and that's an interesting point, I do think that the fact that they force a game seven does give him the opportunity and the argument to come back and have a chance to see what he can do with this team next year. Because really, it's the inconsistent play that plagued them, and especially how they finished. They kind of limped in at the end of the season. And, I mean, you know, to be down, and it's no knock that they were down to Miami. It's how they played when they were down to Miami, because they were awful. And once again, the game three just jumps out at you as badly as they played. But they responded. So he didn't lose them. He got them back. So I think it assures that he'll be back with them next season. Boy, I tell you, I told you there'd be a lot of runs scored in this Yankee game. There's been a lot of the phrase crisp baseball will not be applied to this game. You've got players throwing the ball all over the diamond. Yeah, ball's going all over the place. I mean, both pitchers have got to be frustrated. Yes, they've given up home runs. Both of them have given up a home run. But both of them have been victimized by shoddy fielding. And Higgy is struggling today. Threw the ball into left field, trying to throw to third base. Third base coach waving him around. And yes, I know he's the former Met coach, but I can't blame him. He's waving Higgy around, and Higgy slid into third. Like, what are you doing? Like, come on. What are you doing? Who told you to slide? Keep running. Game is tied at 3. Tied at 3. And listen, Rizzo's at the bat, so maybe the Yankees can do some more damage. We'll come back and continue our conversation next on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Mets will tee off in about a half hour. Yankees and Padres having fun up in the Bronx. Yankees with a 4-3 lead. Could have been more, but Grisham robs DJ from having a 3-run home run. So Yankees hold on to the 1-run lead. I got to say this. Harrison Bader, I hadn't seen a lot of him. But I knew of his defense, and it's very good. He's an outstanding defensive center fielder. His bat's a little better than I expected. It is. It's a little better. It's a little better than I expected. We'll see what he does in this position. Saw an article from ESPN on Domingo Germán. You know, Domingo is coming back from the 10-game suspension that he was on. And the question, of course, is, and it's funny because he's saying that he will use less rosin on his hands. And that was why he was suspended, because apparently he had too much rosin on his hands in his last outing before the suspension. And so once again, we get into this gray area of baseball of, okay, how much rosin is too much? How little rosin is too little? What's the standard? What is it? And so for him, and clearly the Yankees need him in the rotation right now because, you know, he's one of their more consistent guys. And so you need him to give you some depth. Bader beats out an infield hit, no double play. Yankees get another run, 5-3. So now the question becomes for him, okay, what do you get? What do you use? How much is too much? How much is too little? And why isn't this, why don't we know? Like, why don't we know? You can only use the rosin that's on the bag, period, done, end of statement. The rosin bag that's out there on the mound, you can use that. That's the only thing. Nothing in the clubhouse, nothing anywhere else, just what's on the, can we get something, can something be as simple as that? It would make life a lot more easier, wouldn't it? As I mentioned, the Mets are in action in Colorado. Yesterday, now, here's the crazy thing, right? Because normally when I'm complaining about the Mets, I'm complaining about the fact that they're not scoring enough runs. Well, last night was not that problem. They scored enough runs last night. They just didn't, their pitching could not hold the runs So the Mets gave them the lead. Not a good night for Verlander. Had some issues. Gave up a ton of runs. But the Mets fought back, got the lead, and then this time the bullpen couldn't hold it. Now, I'm not going to kill the Mets bullpen because the Mets bullpen has pitched a lot. A lot. And we'll probably see some action today because Tylor Megill is on the mound. And Tylor Megill has not been the same Tylor Megill that he was at the beginning of last season when he was filling in for Jacob DeGrom. He has not been the same guy. He's given up 8 home runs this year. 49 hits and 50 innings. 40 strikeouts, 25 walks. He's got ERA just over 4.5. So he's not been that guy. The ball movement has not been there. He hasn't had the control. He's been working behind batters. He's been giving up. The ball's been up in the zone. He's not been a good pitcher. And the ball being up in the zone in Colorado, not exactly a recipe for success. So I expect this is going to be a tough one. Now, I will say this. Austin Gomber is the lefty that is facing him for Colorado. He's got an ERA of 6.48, 50 innings, 54 hits, 31 strikeouts, 19 walks, 11 home runs. So we could be looking at the Mets lost last night 10-7. We could be looking at a very similar score in Colorado again for this Met team. And this is the time around Memorial Day where you start to look at your team early, right? This is kind of the quarter pole, would you say? Kind of the quarter pole of the season. So the Mets have played 53 games. They're 27-26. They're a game above 500. And look at Willie Calhoun. Six-three Yankees. And so at 27-26, as a Met fan, you're not happy. Yeah, you understand it's a long season, but we're going into June. June is Thursday. So when does this team start to put a string of games together, similar to what the Yankees have done in the month of May? When do they put a stretch together where you can say, okay, now we're beginning to see what this Met offense looks like. Now we're beginning to see what this Met team is. Have they played? They've played okay. They're not playing up to expectations. And it's funny because this is really the same conversation that Jordan Rondon and I just had about the Giants, right? Because, listen, the Giants made the postseason last year. So now your expectation is you got to at least make the postseason again. And so for me, when I'm looking at this Met team, I'm expecting them to be at least as good as the 101 win team that they were last year, because in theory, from a pitching standpoint, they are better, right? You added Verlander to Scherzer, okay? Quintana, you haven't seen yet. All right, Carrasco had a good outing his last time, which saved you because he was struggling before that. You don't have Diaz, but the bullpen has been, for the most part, has been solid. David Robertson's been outstanding. And you've tweaked it a little bit. You've got the young kids. Listen, I don't know where this team would be without these young kids. Alvarez has been phenomenal since he's gotten himself together and learned the strike zone. He's been better defensively than you ever thought he could be. And so, I mean, Batty's been great at third. So you're seeing some signs of things that's okay, this is great. As a matter of fact, like I said, I don't know where this team would be without these kids, because they were struggling. The kids have added some length to the batting order. And once again, we got a payroll of over $300 million. So yes, are they winning? Are they over 500? Yes. Are they a playoff team? Yes. But that's a minimal standard for this franchise. This Steve Cohen did not spend this money for them to just make the postseason. Steve Cohen spent this money for them to win a World Series. And they do not look like a World Series team right now. Now listen, they could get better. They could look like a World Series team down the line. With the money that you know the owner has, they can make a change and make a splash transaction at any time. At any time. So that's the positive. It's not like under previous regimes, it's like, oh man, well, this is who we are. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. Hopefully they'll get better. You know, they have the wherewithal now. They have the opportunity. IKF is just rolling. This is like a merry-go-round, like a carousel. Just runners keep scoring. 7-3 Yankees. Interrupting my Met thoughts. So I understand that. I understand it's May. I understand that, you know, it's a long time. You could even jump once you get to, as long as you play, as long as you don't lose ground and you're not terrible, to the All-Star, when you get to the All-Star break or the trading deadline, you'll make some moves, you do whatever. You have confidence that with this regime of Epler and Cohen, they'll get it done. But with the payroll that high, you shouldn't worry. It seems like you shouldn't have to worry about this. And yes, it's hard for me to, you know, completely analyze this team because of the fact that, you know, there's no Quintana. The pitching staff is incomplete. The bullpen is incomplete. But I knew about the bullpen going in. The bullpen has not been the problem. To be fair, in a large amount, the starting pitching has been a problem, but not an overwhelming problem. The consistent thing where you haven't had injuries has really been the starting lineup offensively. And the lineup just has not produced consistently. And that's a concern. Now, Marte's come along. He's got some hits recently. McNeil has starting to hit a little bit. And we mentioned the kids. But for the most part, it's as Pete Alonso goes, and I agree with my partner, Gordon Damer, why would you even pitch to Pete Alonso? I'd wave four fingers as soon as he walked out of the dugout. When he left the on-deck circle, I would have four fingers. I wouldn't let him beat me. Somebody on that Met offense would have to prove they could beat me consistently. This team revolves around Lindor and Alonso. And they've got to get some help in this team. They really do. They really, really do. 1-800-919-3776. Yes, the Yankees have scored another run. It's now 8-3. By the time we come back, it'll probably be 12-3. We'll find out next on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
By the way, programming note, Gordon Damer and I are in for Bart and Han tomorrow, so we'll be chatting with you from at noon tomorrow until 3:30. So make us a part of your Memorial Day Monday. Back to the phones we go. Craig is in Lansing. Hey, Craig, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, good afternoon, man. I love listening to the New York radio shows, and yours especially. Awesome job, dude. Thank you. And I just want to say, with the Miami-Boston series, I haven't had a chance to actually watch the game. So I'm kind of stat checking, you know, I've been busy doing other things. And just logically speaking, I'm a math and percentages guy. I just don't believe a guy like Jimmy Butler is going to continue to play bad when he's played good the entire playoffs. And the same reason why the Celtics have won the last couple games, you can't mathematically expect that team to not win games. They're going to win games. That being said, I think that the math lays back in Miami's favor. Butler's not supposed to have a horrible game. I mean, it took him having a bad game and a miracle shot for that team to win. And I don't think that the Celtics fans can expect Miami to just go down without a fight. And I think they're going to win the game. And, you know, just like I said, and then you bring up the baseball thing real quick. Mm-hmm. Tell me why, because I don't understand. Why can't they just say no substances? No substances. I mean, you know, you can't use anything. That way, if we see anything, it's illegal. And now we're not trying to split hairs and figure out what the rules are. You can't use anything. And thanks a lot, man. And I appreciate the great show.
All right, Craig, thanks for the kind words. I guess they could. I guess they could. They could ban that if they wanted to. But there's always the situation, you know, they banned the spider tech and all this other stuff that they were using allegedly to try to get a better grip on the ball, to let you know. I mean, looking at Gerrit Cole's cap, I think he's used a little rosin today. He's got it all over his baseball cap. I'm sure they could, Craig. That's a great point. They could legislate and do whatever they want. They're Major League Baseball. They could say that you can't use the pine tar, just like the batters do, to try to get a better grip of the ball, of the baseball bat. So it is going to be interesting to see what they do, because this is a thing that continues to plague them. It's about pitchers trying to find. It's really gamesmanship, right? It's about pitchers trying to find an edge. And it's about hitters trying to find an edge to be able to, you know, try to do what they do best. Try to control the baseball so they can control their spin rate and try to, you know, do a better job at trying to hit and get runners on base. As far as the NBA is concerned, where we're talking about the game tomorrow – you're right about percentages, but the only thing is you can't eliminate the human element from that. The emotion part of it. And I would agree with you to a point that Miami is due. Okay, they've won three in a row. They've now lost three in a row. Boston has lost three in a row. They've now won three in a row. And they were very fortunate to win the one last night. So now the question becomes, which Boston team shows up and which Miami team shows up? And I just think emotionally, the way that Miami lost that game last night, it could be tough to come back and say, man, you were 3 seconds away from being in the NBA Finals against a team that you seem to always have to end up trying to beat to get to the NBA Finals, right? And so from an emotional standpoint, it's going to be interesting to see how they get over it, them being Miami. It's going to be interesting to see how they can do it and if they can do it. If you're Boston, your thought process is, man, we are lucky to be here because we could have been eliminated in Miami. We have to play better. We have to do the little things. We have to make sure that we don't allow Miami back in. We have to turn our emotions up defensively. We have to be more efficient on offense. We got a second life here. We can't blow it. And Miami could do the same thing, Craig, and look and say, listen, we were 3 seconds away from winning. All we have to do is get our guys to play better. We know that Butler and Abayu and Bam Adebayo at one point were 5 of 24. They're not going to be that way in a game 7. We know that. So that's what makes game 7s so intriguing. That's why it has become, and has always been, but it's even more so now, billed as the most popular phrase in sports, game 7. Because every cliche applies. Every situation, you want to see it. All the emotions are there. All the pressure is there. It's all the storybook possibilities are there. That's what makes this so intriguing. And the fact that it's been a series of runs makes it even harder for you to try to figure out what's going to happen tomorrow night, right? Because you're really not sure. You don't know which Boston team is going to show up. You don't know which Miami team is going to show up. Anything can happen in the game 7. An injury could take place during the game that could derail everything. I mean, everything is on the line here. This is it. This is the last game. And you could say, well, Boston, through their history, has owned game 7s. It's a long history. Doesn't reflect a lot on this group of Celtics. I mean, they won the game 7 against Miami last year. They also lost the game 7 to, you know, they also lost in the game 7 to, or the, yeah, game 7 to Golden State. So clinching games has been an issue for this Boston team, right? The one thing that you saw last night, which is something that you haven't seen, and they played well for the most part together, but then Tatum kind of disappeared in the fourth quarter because I just think he was exhausted. But it was early. It was kind of one of the few games that Brown and Tatum played well together. And that's something that they have not gotten a lot out of. Something they haven't. My concern would be this if I were a Miami Heat fan. My concern would be that the home benches tend to play better at home. So I expect that I would get better bench play, better performances from Boston's bench than Miami's bench in a game seven. If I'm a Miami fan, I would say the worst performance Boston gave me in game three was in their building. I mean, one of the worst. It was in our building, rather. But what I'm saying is, leading up to that, the two losses that they started out with, that Miami started out with, was in your building. So I know Miami can go into your building and beat you. With your great offense, with your great bench, all that. I know we can come in there and beat you. And yeah, I see what you're saying, Craig, about you would expect that Jimmy Butler will not play badly again, like he did last night. You expect to see more of the Jimmy Butler that's going to be aggressive, that's going to go out there, get his teammates involved, but also be more aggressive in the fill-in spots than he was last night, where he just came alive in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter, and willed them back to to take the lead and put Boston on the brink of saying goodbye. That's why it's such a great game seven. Because there's so many variables that you have to look at. So many. Including the fact that Miami could go down in the record books as being the first team in the NBA to have a 3-0 lead and lose four straight. And go home. That could be history making. And is that in the back of their minds? And will that affect them being concerned about making a play? Does Duncan Robinson replay the two missed threes that he took consecutively, when all he had to do was probably just, even though he had hit the three, all he had to do was maybe drive to the basket and pull up for mid-range two on one of those plays? Does Jason Tatum say, man, I've got to be better than 8 of 22, because I think he will be. While I'm sure Jimmy Butler will play better, I think Jason Tatum will play better throughout the game. He started out great. So it's going to be intriguing. We still have 24 hours to figure it out. That's what makes it so much fun. That wraps up this edition of the Larry Hardesty Show for this Memorial Day Sunday. We thank you for listening. Special thanks to our guest who joined us today, Dennis Wozniak of the Associated Press on the Jets, and Jordan Ronan of ESPN on the New York Football Giants. Tom and Joe, have a fabulous rest of your day, and you as well. Up next, the conversation continues on 98.7 ESPN.